the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. I published an article on Friday that I really hope you saw. If not, I hope you'll take a look at it. It's entitled, NARAL's Daughters, The Abortion Rights Crowd is Concerned. NARAL, of course, was the old National Abortion Rights Action League, just NARAL now. It's the nation's oldest abortion rights organization. And the current president, Nancy Keenan, made some amazing comments in Newsweek magazine. In an article in Newsweek, she said that as she looks at the younger generation of women, the generation coming behind the Roe v. Wade generation, the millennials, what she is noticing younger and younger is that there is less fervent support for Roe v. Wade and for abortion on demand. It is an amazing article, as a matter of fact, and Sarah Cliff of Newsweek deserves credit for writing a very fascinating argument. Article in which she really traces not only the situation of NARAL, looking at the generation coming behind, but the larger issue in America. And there are a couple of things in this article that are absolutely arresting in terms of attention. You have Nancy Keenan, the president of NARAL, talking about seeing the crowd arrive for the Right to Life March. And what she notices in the March for Life is that these young people are so many and they are so committed. She compares that to what she calls the postmenopausal militia of the older feminist movement, and she sees a problem for the pro-abortion side. And yet, the most amazing thing in this article was not said by Nancy Keenan, it was said by Kate Michelman, the former head of NARAL, and one of the most famous abortion rights advocates in America. She points to the development of the ultrasound, and how many times have we talked about that on this program? The emergence of the ultrasound has reshaped, reshuffled the entire question of abortion, because now people are able to see inside the womb and they see what they had wanted to deny, and that is the essential, undeniable humanity of the unborn human infant. And Kate Michelman, no less than Kate Michelman, says that the equation is reset when folks look at those images and see a full breathing human being. That is glass shattering important in terms of its velocity in the whole question of abortion, in terms of the public debate, in terms of how Americans are coming to understand this, the shaping of the American mind. It tells us a whole lot that in Newsweek magazine, no less, you have Nancy Keenan and Kate Michelman making such amazing comments. We're going to talk about why that is so and what it means coming up next on the Albert Mohler Program. That's what we're going to be talking about. We come back in just a moment after review some issues in the news. In the news, of course, there is so much going on here in the United States. Can you imagine a weekend in which there has been a more varied onslaught, a more dramatic onslaught of disaster? First of all, we have the flooding that has hit so much of America, certainly the South Central states, in particular Mississippi and Tennessee. The pictures coming out of Nashville alone are just frightening. We have tornado deaths in Arkansas and I'm told now in Mississippi as well. We're looking at a system, a storm system that dumped double digits of rain in terms of inches throughout much of the central portion of the country. I had to fly through it going and coming from here to Minneapolis last weekend, and I can tell you there's a whole lot of weather out there. But especially in Nashville, Tennessee, you start looking at the flooding of the rivers, you're looking at entire neighborhoods that are now cut off from civilization. It's a reminder to us of how quickly something like this can happen. One specialist I saw estimated that this flood may be what he described as a 500-year flood. So unusual that it would be something that the odds are would happen only about every 500 years. And then on the Gulf Coast, of course, the onslaught of this oil spill. You're talking about thousands of barrels of oil spewing out into the Gulf and now threatening Gulf beaches for five states. And you're looking not only at the beaches being threatened, but, of course, marine estuaries, marine animals. And this is one of those huge issues before the American people. And even as BP, British Petroleum, is doing its best, and we certainly hope its best, to cap that well and to cut off the flow, the disastrous flow of that oil, is another reminder to us of just how energy dependent we are, just how dependent we are on oil in specific and fossil fuels in general. And what we're looking at here is the collision of different needs and different goods. And the Christian worldview requires that we think through these issues rather than coming to a snap judgment. our hearts certainly are touched when we see the beaches and imagine what would happen with the oil on those beaches. And as we imagine the damage to the wildlife, the marine life in particular, and also marine birds. And it's just a reminder that we, too, are dependent upon that body of water, but not just for water, not just for marine life and fish, not just for shellfish and for birds, but for oil. In Great Britain, of course, there is a great deal of discussion about the general election coming up on Thursday, and the events over the last several days have just made that very interesting election all the more interesting. It looks like David Cameron, the head of the Conservative Party, can expect to be moving into number 10 Downing Street. All the polls are trending in that direction. And as you know, in a national election, trending over the weekend before the election is a very important indicator because it actually tends to underestimate the movement of the electorate rather than to overestimate it. One of the things we've been tracking in Great Britain is the fact that there's a real debate going on there. And if you've been following what's going on, here is the essence of the debate. You have Gordon Brown and the Labour Party in office now for 13 years. You have on the other side David Cameron, the fairly young and fairly new leader of the Tory Party, the Conservatives. And then you have the Liberal Democrats and Nick Clegg. And only the Conservatives believe that the state in Great Britain, the United Kingdom, is too large. And so David Cameron has been talking about the need to make a big society, not a big government, but a big society, looking at the necessity of raising up what Edmund Burke, that great Irish thinker, called the little platoons, rather than government to solve all the problems. The fact is that the British government is about bankrupt, and some who are now speculating about the election say that if the Conservative government is indeed elected and David Cameron becomes prime minister, he may well be a hated man because he's going to have to make incredible cuts in the British budget that will really put him in a very vulnerable position. It says a whole lot that this party is now pushing itself towards election. And so if you're looking at it from this side of the pond, you might say that there's a sense of desperation that must be on the part of the British people if they're going to elect a government they know intends to make cuts they do not want to happen. It's kind of the not in my backyard syndrome. When it comes to tax cuts, especially when it comes to cutting the government budget and entitlements and all the rest, most people are ready to have them cut so long as they are not their own entitlements. And in Great Britain, the pain is going to be so massive, everyone is going to feel the effects of these cuts. Meanwhile, back here in the United States, the attempted terror attack in Times Square is another reminder to us that as these events happen, as lamentable as they are, they serve as reminders of the fact that Americans are so often almost self-consciously and intentionally unarmed for moral combat. I have been fascinated over the last 24 hours as this story has unfolded to hear how commentators in the media are falling over themselves to suggest that this is something other than a terrorist act. You know, when you get down to debating whether it's a terrorist act or not, when there's a car that is smoking with explosives and fireworks and fertilizer intended to go off with a bomb to kill people, what else could you call it? But we're living in one of these days in which moral clarity has surrendered to political correctness. And in a politically correct society, you're more concerned with the therapeutic impact of certain words than with their truth quotient. And that's exactly where we are here. Christians have to be the ones who understand that words really matter and that honesty is right, even if it steps on toes. And at this point, there is no blank yet in front of that terrorism. We're not talking about necessarily Islamic terrorism or this kind of terrorism or that kind of terrorism. We don't know what we're talking about yet. But to argue over whether or not it was an act of terrorism is to miss the point entirely. What else was the intention of putting a car in Times Square filled with explosives where it could create an enormous fireball to kill people and make a statement? That is the very essence of terrorism. Fascinating things in the news that catch my attention. I don't know if any of you saw the Wall Street Journal Personal Journal cover story on how parents became cool. Amy Chozick, writing for the Wall Street Journal, writes that television producers have discovered that sitcoms and dramas that show angst and conflict between parents and adolescents are really out of date. It turns out that today's families are not marked by an enormous amount of conflict between parents and adolescents. And looking at it at face value, you'd say, well, that's probably a good thing. Well, in one sense, it might be. But what I found really interesting about this article is the fact that it documents the fact that the reason in many homes parents and teenagers have such good relationships is because the parents have decided they're not actually going to discipline or draw hard boundaries. They're simply going to be friends. And if they are friends, well, they're going to dress the same and try to listen to the same music and go to the same movies and just be friends. Well, you know, somehow Hollywood thinks it's no longer really in date and relevant to suggest conflict between parents and teenagers. But it appears that's at the cost of parents just deciding to live like teenagers. Fascinating to have that documented, of all places, in the Wall Street Journal. We're going to come back to talk about the daughters of NARAL and why their story matters to all of us. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. A huge generational shift is observable within the American population on the issue of abortion. If you look at the population avidly committed to abortion rights, it is trending gray. It is trending old. And as a matter of fact, even some within the movement refer to the ardent defenders of Roe v. Wade as a postmenopausal militia. Nancy Keenan, who's the current president of NARAL, used to be the old National Abortion Rights Action League, and in recent years has just turned itself into NARAL. It's the nation's oldest and perhaps most significant pro-abortion activist movement. You have Nancy Keenan making a very fascinating set of statements to Newsweek magazine, in which she comes right out and says, yes, we're concerned. We're concerned that the younger generation of women in particular, young people in general, but women in particular, are not as committed to abortion rights. Now, it's interesting that she said such a thing. It's interesting that Newsweek magazine published the statements, and it's interesting that her statements were accompanied by others, including some made by Kate Michelman that I found absolutely astounding, that indicate something of how the American mind and the American heart is changing on abortion. Let me tell you why I particularly wanted to talk about this today. And it is because I think every once in a while we need a reminder that Americans and human beings in general, cultures and societies really can change on vital moral issues. It has happened. American history can record time and time again where there were massive moral shifts in the American population. Take the issue of slavery. A massive moral shift. Did it take time to happen? You bet. It took a lamentable, horribly long time to happen, but it happened. And you see this in so many other issues as well, in civil rights. And you see this right now in the issue of abortion. And on the issue of abortion, what we can detect looking all throughout this society, coast to coast, north to south, is that there is a sea change underway, and it is trending towards respect for human life. Now, long before Newsweek magazine came out with this story, there was the observation that perhaps nothing has been more instrumental in bringing this about than the ultrasound machine. Because the ultrasound machine has put before the eyes of the watching world what so many had denied or refused to see, and that is the inherent, undeniable, essential humanity of the baby in the womb. That baby that is the one who is to be aborted. It has shifted the conversation on the part of most Americans from merely a conversation about a woman's right to a conversation about the moral status of the unborn child. And that means that that reshapes the entire abortion equation. Sometime back on this program, I referred to what one young woman said. She said, we are the generation that had the ultrasound images taped to the refrigerator door, and then we came to know those images as our little brothers and little sisters. It is a different world. Kate Michelman, who is the former president of NARAL, perhaps one of the women that is most significant in terms of fighting for abortion rights. I actually found myself more than once at the U.S. Supreme Court with her in the crowd as we were on opposite sides of the issue. She is an ardent and articulate defender of abortion rights. She's a part of that older generation. And when she was speaking about the ultrasound, she said something absolutely remarkable. She was saying that more Americans are now able to see, thanks to the ultrasound, that the baby is a full-breathing human being. That's absolutely amazing. A full-breathing human being. Now, for Kate Michelman to use that kind of language, now, she went on to put it in a political context. She said the other side has been able to use this technology to their advantage. You bet. But the bottom line is, words came out of her mouth that I have never heard, and I'll be honest, I thought I would never hear from someone in that kind of leadership position in the pro-abortion movement. Even Nancy Keenan is saying, look, we're going to have to reshape the equation to reach a younger generation. We're going to have to talk about the moral complexity of abortion. It's a morally complex issue. I don't think it's as morally complex as she thinks it is. But, you know, even the conversation about it being morally complex is a shift in the right direction. Because the pro-abortion movement, going all the way back to the 1960s, was saying that a woman should have an unrestricted right to abortion at any time for any reason or for no reason. You talk about an extremist position. And now you see them backing off of that. By the way, it's not just NARAL and Newsweek magazine. In the New York Times on Saturday, just 2 days ago, Charles M. Blow, writing in his column in Saturday's edition of the New York Times, wrote about abortion's new battle lines. He writes about shifting views on abortion in the U.S. Supreme Court. This is especially relevant, of course, with the announced retirement of Justice John Paul Stevens. And now Charles M. Blow is suggesting that Americans think the court is too liberal. And Roe v. Wade is a symbol of that liberal excess. He writes that, and by the way, he uses a very, very committed language here. He comes out, this is an opinion piece, and to be fair to the New York Times, it's published on the opinion page, so that's fair. But listen to what he has to say. He says, according to a Gallup report released on Wednesday, the percentage of college-educated people who favor legal abortion under any circumstances has been dropping since the early 1990s and has now reached a new low. And while the largest overall drop was among men over 65, it was closely followed, get this, by a drop among women under 30. That's fascinating. Women under 30. Very close even to older men in falling off of high rates of abortion support. He writes, the shifting landscape is ripe for a Roe, that's R-O-W, over Roe, that's R-O-E. In other words, a fight over the Roe v. Wade decision. It's coming with luck. President Obama, this is Charles Blow writing here, with luck, President Obama will nominate a warrior to the court, preferably one who also agrees with Representative Long. And here you have a statement made earlier. Janet Long of Florida had said that no one should vote on the issue of abortion who doesn't, quote, have ovaries. Well, that's not going to happen. Why? It's because this isn't just about those who have ovaries. This is about the unborn child. And that is the central issue. That is the reason that the abortion rights movement is faltering. And the kind of language that you don't have any say in this, if you don't have ovaries, betrays the fact you just don't get it. This isn't so much about ovaries as it is about human beings and human dignity and the sanctity of human life. And whether it's the ultrasound or just the moral shaping of a conversation, the power of pro-life arguments, obviously something's going on here. I'd love for you to join the conversation and talk about how you see it on the ground. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You may be a part of Generation A or Generation B or C or D. You may have detected some of this, but I'll tell you, I hope you are detecting this, I'll tell you, you can see it in the numbers. The statistics are clear. The Gallup organization reported just over the last couple of years that for the first time, more Americans call themselves some kind of pro-life than pro-abortion. And even as there is a vast support for some kind of abortion rights and abortion under some kind of circumstances, the American people obviously have a very unsettled conscience on this issue, and the movement is not toward the pro-abortion position. I'd like to know what you're thinking about it. I'd like to know what you're hearing. Yeah, as I say, you can see it in the numbers, but I'll tell you, I find far more fascinating the fact that you can hear it in the air. Even on places like college and university campuses, you can hear the hesitation in the voice of those who say, well, I'm not sure where I am on abortion, but I'll tell you this. You can't tell me that unborn child is just some kind of unexpected byproduct of conception. The phone number is 877-893-8255. It's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The pro-abortion movement is scared, and I believe they have reason to be. Their own research indicates a significant intensity gap between older and younger women on the issue of abortion in America. Even as surveys indicate that Americans remain deeply divided over the question of abortion, the numbers are only part of the story. The other part of the political equation is passion and intensity. That's really important. A smaller group with greater intensity generally will win over a larger group with apathy. And that is because when we come with conviction over against confusion, conviction almost always wins. This is a fascinating development. So many things happening, one on top of the other. You have Newsweek magazine with this coverage. Newsweek coming back with a follow-up story on the future of the pro-abortion movement. Then you've got the article by Charles Blow of the New York Times on abortion's new battle lines. He's obviously writing from the same kind of concern, writing about what he sees as ominous developments. It might be tempting, he says, to think of this as a temporary blip, a conservative swing during tough times, but that would be short-sighted. There is a long-range trend of public opposition coming from unexpected quarters. Yeah, including college-educated young women, of all things. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. By the way, NPR this morning, NPR, National Public Radio, had a focus on the adoption of baby girls from China, the Diane Rehm Show. Fascinating. And a recognition of the gender side that's going on there, the disproportionate number of baby girls being aborted and being killed by infanticide. You know, I wonder how many of those young women are counting the women who are missing around the world and recognizing that abortion has been disastrous for women. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Newport Richey, Florida. Lori's listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Lori.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Dr. Mohler. In regards to the comment about if you only have ovaries, you have an opinion, every child that's been conceived has a father. And I think that fathers have the right to know on a doctor's description of the baby and that they need to see an ultrasound. And I think that fathers do go with these pregnant women when they go to have an abortion, and I think that that can have a significant impact. So I think the fathers have a right as well.
Yeah, Lori, I want to agree with everything you said. I want to amplify it by saying they not only have a right, they have a responsibility. And one of the lamentable aspects of this whole equation is a failure of men to act as men, to take responsibility for their offspring, to support women, to push for life rather than for the easy way out as they see it. But I'll tell you, we're seeing a sea change in American culture over this, and that has to be celebrated. You know, Laura, you make a very essential point. You say, look, every child has both a mother and a father, and that's old school, but it's still true. And when you talk about a mother and a father, they both have both rights and responsibilities to be recognized here. But, you know, Laura, it's even bigger than that. And if we have a mother over here or a parent who is neglecting or abusing the child, their own child, society steps in and says, we have an interest here. That child is not just that parent's son or daughter. That child belongs to the entire community. The parent bond must not be broken and must be indeed ultimately respected until and unless it comes down to to something as egregious as child abuse or extreme neglect. And that's when society steps in and says, we have a voice in this. It's not just the mother. It's not even just the mother and the father. Society at some point has an interest here. And what I think is happening in American society is that we are recognizing writ large that we have a responsibility to every unborn child, not just our own unborn child, but every unborn child. And once that idea goes viral in this society, everything changes. And so amongst many of the other developments that have taken place in American culture over the last several years, the attentiveness to the fate and the condition and the safety and security of children eventually means we have to know it means the unborn as well as the born. And that's making a huge difference. What sense would it make to say we as a society only have a stake in this child after the child is born? There are so many things trending in the right direction here. For instance, you have now in many states, the ability to bring two homicide charges against a murderer who murders a pregnant woman. Because it's not just one death, it's two deaths. Well, what sense does it make to try that person, that perpetrator, in a courtroom on one hand, and then to say that the same equation means nothing in the abortuary across the street? The fact is that Americans are growing more and more aware of the kinds of contradictions that we've lived with in our willful blindness as a society over the last several decades. We should be very, very thankful that that's giving way to a new understanding. Give me a call and tell me what you're seeing, what you're thinking. The phone number 877-893-8255. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. A generational shift, a sea change in public opinion. Those are not exaggerations of what's happening on the abortion issue. It's not to say we have any right or room to rest and assume that things will just move in the right direction. It is a reminder to us, and this is what I think is so essential for us to underline, that minds do change, not just individually, but culturally. And our history bears that out. And right now we are in one of those periods when there is a shift in the moral consciousness of the American people, and it's taking place on the issue of abortion, and it's taking place where it matters most, and that is among younger women, by and large, the same people who would be the target population for abortions. Are you seeing this? Does it give you hope? How do you interpret these signs and statistics? How are you picking up on the conversation of the culture around you? Give me a call. Let me know. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Sellersburg, Indiana. Colleen's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Colleen.
Hello. I just wanted to say that I truly believe that sometime in the not too distant future, we will read about abortion in the history books. And I think the people in this country are going to be appalled that this was ever allowed. Much like we look at slavery, we just can't imagine this was ever legal. And I think that one of the main factors that has changed a lot of people's view is ultrasound, when people can actually see that this is a living, moving human being.
You know, Colleen, I have seen those images, and as a man, and indeed, even as a father, looking at those images, I'll tell you, they are absolutely arresting. And our children are at an age where I can tell you, we were looking at pretty fuzzy images. Nowadays, you know, you're able to see these 3D and 4D images in which you can pick out facial features and minute features of the unborn child. You can see so much more. I can just imagine what it'd be for a mother to see that, to see the life within her own womb. It's moving for a father. It's deeply emotional and unspeakable, but for a woman, it must be even more than that. You know, Colleen, when you talk about America looking back on abortion the way we now look back on slavery, let me give you another sign of hope. It's a sign of hope that's kind of buried in an historical detail that is to our shame. But every once in a while, we need to look at it and just remember that things can change. The year was 1857, and the United States Supreme Court was facing the question of the legal status of slavery. And in 1857, there was the hope that the U.S. Supreme Court would put an end to the slavery trade and would indeed lead the nation by declaring the illegality and unconstitutionality of slavery. Instead, in a decision that is perhaps the most infamous ever handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court to before Roe v. Wade, and that is the Dred Scott decision, Dred Scott v. Sanford, 1857, the U.S. Supreme Court not only ruled that the slavery could continue where it existed, but it also discounted the humanity of African Americans. That was 1857. Well, it is lamentable to imagine what it cost to get from 1857 to 1865 in terms of the U.S. Civil War. But on the other side of the Civil War, America had settled the issue. And on the other side of that civil war, a shooting war that took the carnage beyond anything that we can imagine today, on the other side of it, America was in a new place working on a new conscience on the issue of slavery. Well, the reality is that I think Roe v. Wade is very similar to Dred Scott. Dred Scott, 1857, Roe v. Wade, 1973. It took 10 years and a fighting war of outright bloody carnage for America to change its mind on the issue of slavery, but it did. Thankfully, we have not been in a shooting war in this country, but we have been in something that has been well described as a culture war. And in this culture war, it hasn't lasted just the 4+ years of the U.S. Civil War. It has lasted now into its fourth decade. But nonetheless, we can see the shifts. We can see the change. And I think, you know, just to amplify what you said, Colleen, and to agree with you, I think one day not only will we look back at abortion, if the Lord gives us this grace, the way that we look back at slavery, I think we're going to look back at Roe v. Wade the way that we look back at the Dred Scott decision. I think we're going to say the U.S. Supreme Court can get things colossally wrong, but getting it so wrong can somehow, in the most unusual and costly way, set up a discussion that leads to a far better place. And I hope that's where we are in abortion. I hope we eventually look back at Roe v. Wade the way America looks back at Dred Scott. And we realize we had to get out of that. We had to move away from that. We had to make a clear statement, a national, undeniable, public, unconditional statement that decision was wrong. And that's what we need on Roe v. Wade. It's costly to get there. Not only is it costly in terms of all the lives that have been given to the pro-life movement, all the lives that have been invested, all the hours, all the months, all the work that is still being invested, the most costly element of this war is that there, too, is a carnage to this war. Unfortunately, it is the carnage of the unborn, over 40 million of whom have been aborted since 1973 and the Roe v. Wade decision. And I do believe the American mind is changing. I just wish and hope and pray it will change more quickly. The Charles Blow article in the New York Times is really interesting, not only because of his editorializing. Again, I'm not throwing stones. He's writing in the opinion section of the paper, so that's fair. But he's writing for an audience, and that's what's really interesting here. He's writing for an audience, the typical reader of the New York Times, that is evidently, by his expectation, going to be pro-abortion. And he's trying to explain to them what Nancy Keenan of NARAL is trying to explain to her constituency, and that is that there is a crisis coming. If you are an ardent abortion rights supporter, you have to be alarmed by what you see coming behind you. A younger generation has a very different understanding. A younger generation that is not a part of the postmenopausal militia, to use their own phrase, of the first feminist generation that pushed for abortion and won that at the U.S. Supreme Court in 1973, their children, and even more importantly, not only their daughters, but their granddaughters, are far more pro-life. Far less supportive of abortion, far more ready to remember the ultrasound taped on the refrigerator door than they are the old feminist chants of the 60s and the 70s. You know, the reasons for this are undoubtedly many, and some of them are undoubtedly traceable to human agency and others probably not. But the reality is that there is an opening here that is ours as a challenge. The issue now for the pro-life movement is whether we will continue to define the issues, continue to show Americans that full breathing human being in the womb, and continue to make the case as we continue to have the hope that the American mind and the American heart can change. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I appreciate you joining in the discussion and consideration of this issue of the American mind changing on the issue of abortion. I'd love to hear from you always, not only by calls to this program, but 24/7. Glad to hear from you by email. Write me at mail@albertmueller.com or just go to albertmueller.com, hit the mail button, and we'll be glad to receive your communication. I say at the end of every one of my articles published at the website, I'm glad to hear from readers, and that's true. I cannot write back to all of you, but I certainly am glad to hear from all of you. You can also, of course, follow my Twitter feed. It's at twitter.com. Just follow Albert Mueller, all one word. And I would encourage you to do that because all during the day, I'm sending out messages, often with links about the issues that are going on in the day, things I think you need to see, angles I hope you'll think about. and kind of tracking the issues of the day. For instance, today I sent out tweets, including one about a Christian preacher arrested for saying homosexuality is a sin. That's in Great Britain. And it is just as stark and straightforward as I told you. He was arrested. I love the part, and I say this in terms of irony, in which he was arrested for speaking in a voice loud enough that others could hear. Well, I think that's what you call communication. Why else would he be speaking? It tells you a whole lot. This man was arrested simply for saying that homosexuality is a sin. And we'll be tracking this story, I guarantee you, in days ahead. And right now we're trying to get in touch with people on his legal team to find out more about that case. Also from Great Britain, Philippa Stroud, who is likely to become a major figure in the new Conservative government, expected to be elected Thursday, is under censure by the British press for being a part of an evangelical church pastored by her husband that believes homosexuals can change. That is considered so out of bounds. To believe that homosexuality is sinful and to believe that homosexuals can and should change, that's so out of bounds that she's under an almost avalanche of attack from the British press here in the final days looking to the election. Also from Great Britain, the Church of England is expected to approve the consecration of women bishops, and that is at its General Synod coming out in July. Final proposals are to be published this week in Great Britain, and I just want to remind you all that a decision to ordain women as pastors is pretty much a decision to ordain women as bishops. If you have bishops in your church, people who hold that title, it's simply arbitrary to say women can serve as pastors and not as bishops. This is a church that I believe made its grave error in violating scripture on the issue of women as pastors. Now it's simply going to have to follow through the logic of its position. Time magazine came out this week with its 100 most influential people in the world. Love for you to take a look at that list and see who's on it and who's not, and perhaps your own list. Who do you think is most influential in the world? Thursday is the National Day of Prayer. We were following the issue related to Franklin Graham's disinvitation. Someone asked me, sent me an email asking, why did you not say he was uninvited? Well, uninvited means you were never invited. He was invited to be the speaker of the Pentagon prayer service and was uninvited, which means, in this case, disinvited. We're going to be talking about that more in days to come as well. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Back tomorrow from Atlanta, Georgia, with Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'll see you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.